Support comes from Fox Tucson Theater's Picture Palace series, a diverse mix of classic films, family movie events, music and movie nights featuring local musicians paired with a themed movie, and independent Mexican film screenings by Cinema Tucson. More information is at foxtucson.com.
Let's all go to the lobby. It once invited movie audiences to take a break and refuel at the concession stand. Now, Arizona Spotlight producer and host Mark McLemore and film essayist Chris DeShiel invite film fans to join them in the lobby to stock up on recommendations and share some history in conversations about great films from across time and around the world. In this episode, Chris and I welcome filmmaker and educator Robert Loomis to discuss the films of guest Linda Varela, a young filmmaker at the start of a promising career.
Hi, I'm Linda. I am a recent U of A graduate from the film program, and I will be going on to CalArts to get my master's in film and video. And I like movies, but don't know that much about them.
Your work betrays your words. Your work does not look like it was done by somebody who's not really fluent in cinema.
So I have been studying film for about 4 years now. So I am, you know, well versed in terms of like the language of film and the technical aspects and all of that. But there are many, many films that somebody with my level of education should have watched by now.
Well,
that
should.
I have not watched by now.
I'm going to blame your parents. if they don't start you young, it's, you know, there's a lot of catching up to do at this point. But
right.
I watched your films in I See Maya Darren.
I love Maya Darren.
So. Ah, I knew it. of course, we got some David Lynch there, Kenneth Anger.
Funny enough, I've never seen a David Lynch film other than Eraserhead.
Well, that's a good place to start.
I do love Rose a lot. I mean, I just was immediately like, wow, this is great.
Thank you.
And the autobiographical one is...
Daughter of Eve.
It was wonderful, too.
Thank you.
The cinematography in both, but certainly in Rose with the use of the colors, which that was the real kind of thing, I think, was that really bright palette, almost fauvist. Right, and then we have the color go out when she's sort of in the part that goes back to reality. So really using the cinematography as a storytelling technique, not just as a style, right? It was there to create meaning.
Exactly.
I'm glad to hear that you all enjoyed that. And actually, Rose is one of my favorite projects that I've ever worked on. And I worked on it with Skylar Cardella, who also just graduated from the program. We came up with the concept of the film together, and we both produced it, and I was the director and he was the cinematographer. He was a first-time cinematographer too, which I think what ended up being on the screen was really impressive.
The way that Skylar lined up the shots, although it was very kind of by the book, it also was really eye-grabbing. And so something about the straightforwardness of the visuals really captured my eye at first. And then when there were a few Dutch angles that were thrown in, that was even like more exciting. It's like, oh, it's not straight now. Like, I really like this. As I think Robert mentioned, the colors, the way the different characters are bathed in these primary colors or sort of muted primary colors was really attractive. So tell us something about the inspiration behind the film and why it took the form that it did.
Yeah, so this was done for Professor Michael Mulcahy's fiction production class. And so the idea for that class is that you pair up with somebody else in the program and you come up with a film together, and it's about creating a fiction film. I had this concept in my head for a long time about this very non-dialogue-driven horror type film, because I don't like watching horror films, but that's all that comes into my brain. I wanted to do something about this girl, you know, going to like a really fancy party and being chased by this demon. And basically all of the accessories that she puts on, like, you know, she has hair extensions and false lashes and heels, and all of these are basically threatening her survival. So it had to do with like beauty standards and how, you know, these things that women are encouraged to do really, you know, affect them psychologically. And then Skylar had an idea for a film about addiction. And so we sort of took his concept and then applied the form of what I wanted to do. And we ended up being really compatible visually. You know, I'd seen his work previously, and we both visually have similar styles.
And here's a sample of the ambience from Linda Varela's short film, Rose.
What we wanted to convey the most was sort of this feeling of deep fear and despair that somebody goes through when they're in the middle of a battle with addiction. And we decided that we wanted the film to be more an experiential piece than a traditional narrative. I do know that when we screened it at the Loft, a lot of people didn't quite understand what the story was, but they did know the feeling. And so I think we were successful in achieving that.
Yeah, I caught on to the addiction angle too, because the shrouded figure handed the daughter pills or something that mm-hmm. she ate, tablets. Because the way the mother was acting was like someone who was suffering from addiction, from my experience.
Well, we wanted to really show that sort of generational trauma angle of it. And, you know, addiction tends to run in families. Mental illness tends to run in families. And how a parent behaves can affect how you will end up behaving. So we also wanted to explore that, and we also wanted to show the breaking of that cycle with these two characters.
Varela's short film, Daughter of Eve, explores religion's influence on her upbringing and self-image. It screened at the 2021 Festival Fotogenia in Mexico City.
I still think about priests belittling young girls who showed their shoulders during Mass. I remember that you, Mary, forever virgin, they claimed, were paraded to girls as the ultimate model of what a woman should be. You were pure, unlike the rest of us who were born with the mark of sin. The mark of sin being simply possessing an earthly body. I resented you. I resented you for being the image of what I was supposed to be like. I pushed you away. Can you forgive me?
To what degree would you call Daughter of Eve autobiographical?
Oh, it's probably like 97% autobiographical. It's very much autobiographical and based on my own experiences.
When I saw that it was made before Rose, mm-hmm. that actually surprised me at first, because you were being so honest. You were putting so much of yourself on the screen that I thought you might have to work up to that in a sense. But then I realized, actually, I think it's a generational thing. The contemporary generation is far more used to putting themselves out there and revealing their personal side mm-hmm. in a public way through social media and every other medium. So were you driven to share your inner secrets, or was it something more that you felt you had needed to pry out of yourself?
It was definitely difficult, because I am on social media, and I do have Instagram and Twitter and all of the things, but I am very reserved on social media. I don't post often, and when I do post, it's rarely anything personal. I'm also Mexican, and that's a culture where speaking out about very vulnerable things like that, and especially things like religion and sexualization of young women, it's very taboo. And it definitely made a lot of people in my family very uncomfortable. So it was a really difficult thing to do. At the time that I made Daughter of Eve, that was the biggest film I had made. You know, I'd done little like 2-minute projects, 1-minute projects before that.
The purity of your spirit is what got you chosen, but the purity of your body is what you're known for. Does that ever bother you? An ancestral mother of mine insisted that every woman must be named after you, because every woman is you. I thought that was silly in the past, but I see it now. I do not feel judged by you, but I do feel like others judge me on your behalf. I don't truly know if that's what you want, but I don't think it is. Even if you do judge me, I know you will forgive me.
I wanted to do something that I knew I really cared about. I don't know, I guess I had this sort of insecurity about how what I had to say didn't actually matter when there was real problems in the world. And I felt that I had to do something really vulnerable to break myself out of that thought process. So even if I never did something quite as vulnerable again, I would be free from that. Growing up in the Catholic Church, there's this idea that, like, oh, Mary is this figure that you have to, like, live up to, right? You want to be a Mary and not a Magdalene, right? This sort of, like, dichotomy that's going on. And I never, like, formally left the church, but I did stray away from it. And if biblical Mary had actually lived the way that you know, she is presented as living, how would she have felt? And I'm sure she wouldn't have thought of herself as, like, this great example. She would have probably just felt a lot of pressure, right? Especially since she was, what, 13, 14?
I thought it was very moving, though, how you or the character that you're playing in this film mm-hmm. actually does a direct encounter with Mary rather than through the culture or through the patriarchy. It's just like, okay, this is what my relationship.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I thought that was a very moving moment. The other thing I just like to say, I would go back to what you were saying about the reaction from friends and family members. This is one bit of advice I give. You cannot worry about what your parents think of the movies you make. This is going to condemn them to mediocrity. The ironic thing about the more personal you make something, the more universal it is. That's something I really believe in. And I think the best advice I think I can give to a young filmmaker is just make the movie you really want to make. Do not worry about its reception. Make a movie that only you would make, that if you didn't make it, it wouldn't get made.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Linda's already doing that.
I was using this opportunity for the people listening. Not her.
It's a valuable lesson.
Well, it's great reassurance too, because I definitely, you know, obviously it's hard when you make a piece of work that's so personal and it makes people that you care about so angry.
I latched onto that. You had that little bit of self-doubt. You said, you were saying you weren't sure if something so personal was that meaningful and mm-hmm. everything else going on. I said, it's absolutely the most meaningful things that happening are these things that are the most personal things.
Mm-hmm. John Waters had to make a choice about what direction his filmmaking was going when he started, because his parents were ultra conservative and mm-hmm. were not into the sort of things that John was chasing at that age or even now. He made a point in one of his books, it's not as wise and as useful as what Robert just said, but it's something I think about a lot, which is, if your parents make you make your bed every morning, you will either make your bed every morning for the rest of your life, or you will sleep in a urine-soaked rat's nest to prove you don't have to make your damn bed. And he feels that those are the two ends of the spectrum, you know.
That's pretty much what I said, yeah.
It's kind of extremist, though, I think.
Kind of extremist. Has anyone seen something recently that really impressed you and made a worthy addition to the films that you've seen?
Pretty recent. I saw The Northman.
Yeah.
And right. I've watched it three times already. The second best movie of the last 3 years, the first would be Green Knight.
Ah.
And part of it is, to tie it into what Linda was saying, is it's very visual storytelling, not relying so much on dialogue, right? That we're looking at these amazing visuals that we're allowed to piece together. We're giving these pieces from the filmmakers, and they're not insulting our intelligence by having someone have to explain everything. So Green Knight's probably my favorite film in the last several years. And then The Northman also is based on the same myth that Hamlet's based on. So if you've read Hamlet, you kind of can figure things out. In fact, some spoiler alert. The mom. Anyway. But
a lot of people get killed.
Yes.
Well, someone else can talk about something they've seen recently that they were impressed
That's
by.
That's a good idea.
My choices are often bizarre, and this one is no exception. But I recently saw a film from 1969 by experimental director Ken Jacobs. It's called Tom Tom the Piper's Son. And what he did was he starts with a film of that title from 1905, biograph film, 8 minutes long, by Billy Bitzer. And it basically is based on the nursery rhyme and a bunch of just zany people dressed in 17th century costumes are running after Tom, who has stolen a pig, through various sets, which are very primitive because it's 1905. So we watched that whole thing, which is funny. And then Jacobs took that film and he just did so many different things to it. Like he starts slowing it down, speeding it up, backwards, freeze frame, and then he'll start focusing like a blow up of a certain part of the screen of the image. So it just becomes, you don't even know what you're looking at. It's shapes that are moving. And he does that and it's like, it's amazing. And it even shows you the physical film rolling on the reel. Like you just see it doing that and then backwards, like doing a circular motion. And he even shows like a projection on a surface. He's like filming the film being projected. It's one of the most astonishing experimental films, art films, that I've seen, because it takes this ridiculous and mundane little thing and makes you like perceive the connection between the mind and the image, and then also the material nature of the medium. This film goes like an hour and a half. He does it to the degree that you actually can spot the point at which your mind notices a shape that you can then construct into something that means something.
Nice.
Of course, it's very cerebral, but it sure as hell impressed me.
Well, that's really exciting to hear, because I'm really into experimental film. Like when I joined the film program at U of A, I thought I was going to do narrative. And then the amazing Jack Walsh showed Chris Marker films in his class, specifically Saint Soleil and La Jetée, and those just completely changed the direction that, you know, my art practice and my career ended up going in. And, you know, since I've watched films by people like Storm DeHirsch and like Sadie Benning, whose dad is actually going to teach a class that I'm going to be in next fall.
At CalArts?
Yes.
And that's very exciting, by the way.
Yeah. James Benning?
Yeah, James Benning.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
And CalArts is the pipeline for Disney. Is that in the plans?
I don't think so, no. I'm not thinking of film.
Think what you could do then,
Robert.
The thing I always take encouragement from for the future of cinema is the fact that at this point, if you just focus on the work, whatever you're into, and you just do the work, create a body of work, there's a place for you in the pantheon, if you will. Whether financial success is, to me, the least important thing.
I remember when I was applying to grad schools, I was part of this forum called filmschool.org, where people from around the world, basically, you know, they can share their portfolios and their statements of purpose and all that and get feedback from each other, read reviews of different film schools and all. And most people, I would say like 90% at least, are interested in narrative, right? And they all want to go to schools like AFI and NYU and Columbia, UT Austin, that kind of school. And I remember I exchanged my portfolio with somebody else and they're like, oh, it's visually cool, but where's the beginning, middle, end? And so there's this, I think, idea of what makes a film good, as you were saying, and what makes a film successful. And I feel like the mainstream brain is more along the lines of like, oh, is this a successful narrative that you can follow the story through?
If any smartass ask you that question again, just quote Godard. All my films have a beginning, middle, and end, just not necessarily in that order.
That's a great quote, actually.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Get ourselves a treat. Delicious things to eat. The popcorn can't be beat. Sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. Let's all go to the lobby. Get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby. To get ourselves a treat.
Let's All Go to the Lobby is a production of AZPM. The recording engineer was Leah Britton. The music in this episode was by Gabrielle Pietrangelo. Thanks to the University of Arizona School of Theater, Film, and Television.
Support comes from Fox Tucson Theater's Picture Palace series, a diverse mix of classic films, family movie events, music and movie nights featuring local musicians paired with a themed movie, and independent Mexican film screenings by Cinema Tucson. More information is at foxtucson.com.